Hi, everyone. It's Brian Kilmeade here. Are you tired of those uncomfortable dress shirts, especially when they bunch up under a sweater? If so, then you must check out Collars & Co., makers of the Dress Collar Polo. Listen up. These shirts are four-way stretch, buttery soft polos with firm dress collars on them, so they give you the dress shirt look, but extremely comfortable polo feel. You can wear them with anything, under a sweater, with a blazer, or by themselves as an elevated polo. They work for any occasion. These polos are perfect, whether it's in the office, on a golf course or a night out. Collars & Co. is exploding and have gone viral on social media thanks to the $1 million investment they received on Shark Tank from Mark Cuban and Peter Jones. You don't have to worry about collars that flop down and spread out. They stay firm and sharp all day. It's an amazing array of sweaters, quarter zips, pants, and outerwear. If you're looking for the performance dress shirt or polo that looks great all day, check out collarsandco.com. Use promo code Brian for 15% off of any purchase of $100 or more. That's promo code Brian.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. I don't know if you knew this, but anyone can get the same premium wireless for $15 a month plan that I've been enjoying. It's not just for celebrities. So do like I did and have one of your assistants switch you to Mint Mobile today. I'm told it's super easy to do at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. Intro rate first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to One Nation. Hope you're having a great weekend. I'm Brian Kilmeade. You're going to love the show tonight. Amongst my great roster of guests, Dr. Jordan Peterson. Talk about poison ivy. He used to teach over at Harvard. He's got some insight. Warren Zeiders, a self-made success star. You listen to his music on the country music charts. He's got another number one hit. And Kelsey Grammer will make you love history again. But first, the fastest, most impactful monologue in America. And the theme for this week, funny, yet deranged. You know, few can doubt the co-creator of Seinfeld and the sole creator of Curb Your Enthusiasm, Larry David, is funny. He's known for his dry comedic delivery, professional left-wing politics and policies, but it didn't really come out in his comedy that much.
How many times can you say no?
You couldn't do the big goodbye.
I did the big goodbye. I saw right through it.
You know what I'll do? I'll call you in the middle of lunch. Say it's an emergency, you gotta go.
I did that the last time I had lunch with him.
Okay, dry humor, as I told you. Often weaving his humor with politics sometimes. Remember when he impersonated Bernie Sanders on SNL?
I'm Bernie Sanders, and I want your vacuum pennies.
All right, he has fun with the MAGA movement, too, on Curb Your Enthusiasm.
You know what, actually, I think we'd prefer to sit at a table, please.
What the f***?
So sorry,
I'm rip you out of that car, you little f***.
I'm sorry, I didn't see you.
Just be more careful next time, okay?
Will do, okay.
He's having fun, right? His comedy, for the most part, was a mix of where I stand and not where I do. This is what I stand politically, and this is what I do for a living. But what often happens with big, self-important superstars, the humor disappears, and it disappeared this week. When he published this guest essay in the New York Times, My Dinner with Adolf, comparing Trump to Hitler, mocking fellow left-wing comedian Bill Maher for going to dinner with the man he's consistently ranted against, President Donald Trump.
Okay, so meet up in person. Maybe it'll be different. Spoiler alert, it was. This list of almost 60 different insulting epithets that the president has said about me, things like stupid, dummy, lowlife dummy, sleazebag. I brought this to the White House because I wanted him to sign it, which he did. What I'm going to do is report exactly what happened. You decide what you think about it. And if that's not enough pure Trump hate for you, I don't give a f-.
So I thought that was a great moment for the country. I don't know about you, certainly for Maher's career. But to people like Larry David, it was outrageous. Mocking the meeting in an editorial, substituting Hitler for Trump and himself for Maher. Like this excerpt here, and I'll read it to you. It said this: he was wearing a tan suit with a swastika armband, gave me an enthusiastic greeting, caught me off guard, as you see. Frankly, it was a warmer greeting than I normally get from my parents, and was accompanied by a slap on the back. He continues, I found the whole thing quite disarming. I joked that I was surprised to see him in a tan suit because if he wore that out, it would be perceived as unfuhrer-like. That amused him to no end. And I realized I'd never seen him laugh before. Suddenly, he seemed so human. Now, where did he get that from? This.
My friend said to me, what are you going to wear to the White House? I said, I don't know, but I'm not going to dress like Zelensky, I'll tell you that. Just for starters, he laughs. I'd never seen him laugh in public, but he does, including at himself. And it's not fake. Believe me, as a comedian of 40 years, I know a fake laugh when I hear it.
All right. Get it? Exactly. Funny, right? Not really. And that wasn't the only comparison. Here's what Marr had to say about the meeting itself. Listen.
He didn't get mad. He's much more self-aware than he lets on in public. Look, I get it. It doesn't matter who he is at a private dinner with a comedian. It matters who he is on the world stage. I'm just taking as a positive that this person exists, because everything I've ever not liked about him was, I swear to God, absent, at least on this night with this guy. And he mostly steered the conversation to, what do you think about this? I know.
So this was Larry David's take of that moment that I thought was pretty cool. And that's pretty much the President Trump that I know, maybe that you've had a chance to meet. This is what he wrote, how he wrote it. Here I was prepared to meet Hitler, the one he'd seen in public and the public Hitler. But this private Hitler was a completely different animal. He went on. Oddly enough, this one seemed more authentic, like this was the real Hitler. The whole thing had my head spinning. Newsflash, Trump is not Hitler. Marr should be saluted. And Larry, you may be the comedian, but I know funny, and that's not funny. Bill Maher didn't think so either.
The minute you play the Hitler card...
That's what I think.
You've lost the argument. Nobody has been harder about... and on, and more prescient, I must say, about Donald Trump than me. I don't need to be lectured on who Donald Trump is. Just the fact that I met him in person didn't change that. And the fact that I reported honestly is not a sin either.
In fact, for anyone outside of, let's say, the left-wing squad, you have lost a massive amount of respect. I'm telling you, I've talked to a lot of people who like you and think you're funny. And if you don't watch yourself, Mr. Larry David, you could end up as mocked as another great, Robert De Niro. He's an anti-Trump maniac, and that's how people view him now, not a fantastic actor. I had hoped that in 2025, we had moved past this. You know, when your party wins, you acknowledge it, you go back, try to win the next time. Kind of healthy. But Larry David's essay comparing the president to a man who murdered millions is not. It's not funny. It's a catalyst for the crazy, the type that tried to kill President Trump twice. In closing, I got some optimism. I think in Trump term two, people are seeing him as the American president, not the MAGA one. I mean, for example, this week, Vince Vaughn in the Oval Office, unsolicited, just wanted to say hi. Do you remember when President Trump went to the UFC event? Guess who walked over? 7'1" Shaq, Shaquille O'Neal, just to say hi. Or a World Series championship team showed up at the White House. Guess what? Everyone showed up. The L.A. Dodgers. There they are, from the left coast, meeting the right conservative president. It truly feels, in many ways, like we're back to a normal presidency. You know, where you're critical of policies you don't like and supportive of the ones you do like. Let's not be Larry David as a country. Let's continue to try and put our country over party, win or lose. And please, stop comparing anyone and everyone to Hitler.
Well, joining us now to expand on this and so much more, the author of a brand new book, it's bestseller, I Wish Someone Had Told Me, the best advice for building a great, meaningful career. She's sitting over here, the co-host of The Five, Dana Perino.
Hello.
So Dana, what do you think? I don't know if you've seen those shows or read that editorial.
I paid a lot of attention to it, and I think that this goes back to years and years ago when I've worked in Republican politics for a long time, and even way back in like the late 90s, the Democrats were calling Republicans Hitler. And I remember Newt Gingrich, when he was a speaker, saying, this isn't going to get you anywhere, because where do you go from there? And we've seen where we've gone. I respect Larry David as an actor. I love watching him. I don't pay attention to his politics, but I do think it's interesting that Bill Maher, even Gavin Newsom, have said, we, as Democrats, we've got to figure out what's wrong. We've got to try to fix our party. And they're challenging each other within, not trying to drag each other down. Now, at the end of that, in 2028, who emerges? I don't know. But I feel like you're seeing the Democratic brand, the Democratic Party, really circled the drain this week. It feels like it's dying. Right. You have the problems at the DNC with the head and the David Hogg, the young guy who wants to get rid of all of the moderate Democrats. I mean, if they do that, then the Republicans will win from now into the future.
Because if Larry David was mocking a Republican or a conservative comedian or perceived conservative comedian, I'd say, okay, inappropriate, mm-hmm. but he's mocking someone who, for the last 25, 30 years, has been right in the middle, in the thick of things, going after Trump pretty hard. What's wrong with just talking?
Or what's wrong with being quiet? One of the pieces of advice in that book, actually, is you don't get in trouble for something you didn't say. And also, if you don't think it will be constructive, why say it at all? I actually learned that first part from Dick Cheney. And when I asked him about it, he said he learned it when he was chief of staff to Gerald Ford.
Who was a young guy back then. I still think in his 30s. So you write this book. I wish someone had told me. I had a questionnaire if you dropped off my office. I answered a series of questions. I love the way you structured the book.
Yeah.
Instead of just saying, here's what Brian thinks or Greg thinks, you sprinkled the thing throughout through different themes. Here's an excerpt from your book. This is the advice that you asked me what I would give to other people.
Okay.
So maybe should I read it? What do you think's appropriate?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. It's always the best advice to meet someone without them looking for a job. I said, ask him for a favor. Successful people get that all day. Always send handwritten thank you notes afterwards, mm-hmm. And always thank them again. Make them short. Make them legible. Always include a card or someone from someone to reach you. So if they say, well, I like that guy, how do I reach him? Or that woman, how do I reach him? So I'll put a card in there.
Well, the other thing is I recently had an experience where a young woman wanted to come and see me for some career advice. She came. I was, you know, I don't have a lot of time, but I made time for her. And as we're talking in the moment, I thought, oh, I know somebody who's looking for somebody and can give me a resume and let me. Sure. She didn't have a resume ready. Okay, so if you are a young person or you are the mother or the grandmother of a young person who's looking for a job right now as we go into graduation, make sure they have that resume ready. And there's some tips in the book on what the resume should look like. We're in a modern era. How do you cut through? What skills should you put on? And the most important thing is, what is interesting about you that will make you stand out amongst others?
Well, that's great advice, and for men and for women, right?
Yes. My previous book was just for young women. This one I did for everyone.
All right, Dana Perino, I look forward to seeing you in the hallway telling other people about this book and this book being number one on the New York Times list. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for letting me be here.
And thanks for allowing me to participate. I appreciate it.
Oh, I loved having you in the book. It's important.
Okay. And I believe that for a second.
Yeah.
Dana Perino, thanks so much.
I'm a senior here at Yale, a Jewish senior. And starting day one, October 7th, we started facing this kind of hate. 2 days later, on October 9th, hundreds of students organized by this exact same student group, including many members of the Yale faculty. And we've seen throughout even recent days a continued kind of surgence of this anti-Israel, anti-Semitic activity motivated and perpetrated by members of staff, of administration, and of students.
The stunning revelation from a student at Yale, a senior. As anti-Israeli protests continue to erupt on college campuses across the country, especially the Ivies, why are college professors actually joining in instead of stopping it? Despite efforts from the likes of Yale and Columbia and their administration to condemn these attacks, why did it take Donald Trump's administration freezing millions, dare I say billions of dollars, to really get their attention and have them truly crack down on this poisonous attitude on college campuses against Jewish Americans and political conservatives? Clinical psychologist and a man who was an Ivy League professor himself, Dr. Jordan Peterson, founder of the Peterson Academy, joins us right now for answers. So, Dr. Peterson, when we hear about the anti-Semitism, the anti-conservatism on these college campuses, it caught many by surprise. But as a former professor at these schools, at Harvard, did it catch you by surprise?
No. Well, I don't understand why it caught anyone by surprise. The campuses have been hotbeds of staged protest for four generations, and they've been radically leftist in their protest orientation, and anyone who cries victim generates protest. So this has been set up purposefully for 60 years, and it's become particularly monstrous in the aftermath of October 7th, but it shouldn't take anyone by surprise.
Jordan, the one thing that really surprised me, with all the backlash and all the scrutiny, especially at Columbia, then it pops up at Harvard, and now we're seeing at Yale this week. And then this senior student told me on my radio show, oh, yeah, the faculty not only is a part of it, they helped organize it. So the faculty is against the management of the university, who is, whether they're sincere or not, is worried about losing billions of dollars from the Trump administration. Is the faculty really think they're in charge?
Well, I suppose when a university is being well constituted, the faculty are essentially in charge. But that bird has flown long ago. And the universities are in such a mess that people just can't possibly imagine it. And this has been the case at least for 10 years. And so, and that's exactly what we're seeing play out. I mean, the post-October 7th events have been the most dramatic indication of that, let's say. But I don't understand why it's come as a surprise to anyone. This has been, the writing's been on the wall forever.
So Jordan, I'm pumped up because I think Trump gets it. I think his whole team gets it. They are now making them tell the criteria on their foreign students before you bring them in. I want to know what foreign countries are giving to your schools and what you're giving them in exchange. They're going to challenge the accreditation of the schools, and they're also the 501c3 status. And Harvard's got the audacity to sue back for their grant money. What's your thought about this clash?
Well, the first thing I would point out is that there are institutions like Hillsdale that have never taken federal money for exactly this reason, because eventually there's going to be a conflict between academic freedom and the demands of the of any given administration. But I would also say it's very likely that the Trump people still underestimate the degree to which the universities are entirely decimated. I mean, how are they going to be fixed? So this is what happened at the universities over a 30-year period. Apart from the rise of protest culture, which emerged in the 1960s and has been fostered ever since, for 30 years, the professors stepped back as the administration took over, and administrative costs mounted to the point where tuition costs are insanely out of control and way disproportionate to the rate of inflation. So the administrators took over the university, and then the woke mob took over the administrators. And since then, they've done nothing but hire radically leftist professors, and generally incompetent ones because of the DEI requirement. Now, how are you going to fix that? What are you going to do? You're going to fire all the new, if you're going to fire all the tenured professors, you're going to revamp the administrations completely? That's not going to happen. I can't see any way out of this conundrum in relationship to the universities. I can't see how they can be fixed.
Well, how about this? You don't give them billions of dollars, literally billions of dollars. Now, they're suing back, and the president of Harvard says, what does research have to do with anti-Semitism? A ridiculous statement. It's all part of the whole complex.
And the fact that Harvard is trying to separate research from the broader issues, there's also something about that that's entirely crooked. So let me go delve into that briefly. So when I left the university, which was essentially around 2017, we were already in a position where in order to get a research grant, you had to write a DEI statement. And what that meant was that if your DEI statement didn't meet the criteria of the radicals who were running the granting agencies, then you didn't get your grant. And that was entirely independent of the quality of your research, because they reviewed your DEI statement before they reviewed your research.
Unbelievable.
And so that was a test of ideological allegiance. And all the researchers went along with that.
And that's why this is part of the reason you started the Peterson Academy. Dr. Jordan Peterson, thanks so much.
Yeah, you bet. Nice talking to you.
Same here, always. Meanwhile, next, the media moments that matter. The always funny Tammy Pescatelli does the honors this week. I gave her the VCR. And still to come, everybody knows them on their name. And they are always glad you came. I'm talking about Kelsey Grammer joins One Nation. Also, a quick note. Fox Nation in cooperation with History, Liberty, and Laughs. I'm going to be in Dayton, Ohio, June 21st, Victoria Theater. I'm going to be in Dallas, Texas on October 23rd, the Winspear Opera House, and in Virginia, Richmond, September 27th, Dominion Energy Center. Grab your tickets, BrianKilmeade.com. It'll be a show like no other. You're watching One Nation. Glad you are. Bring up the music.
You hear a lot about weight loss and
that matter.
All right, it's time now for your favorite segment. This week, we gave the VCR and TV guide to comedian and good friend of the show, Tammy Pescatelli. And I asked Tammy, as you know, to tape everything you can, get the TV guide out, and figure out what would be the moments that stood out for you so America could find out what you think about those moments.
Well,
did you do this?
It took me a while to find the TV guide. I will tell you, I dug up all of those treasures somewhere. I did find a few things that I think you might be interested in.
All right, show me one.
Let's talk about Michelle Obama has finally come out and said why she didn't attend the inauguration. She broke her silence, Bri.
Let's hear it.
It took everything in my power to not do the thing that was right or that was perceived as right, but do the thing that was right for me.
Mm-hmm.
That was a hard thing for me to do.
Mm-hmm.
I had to basically trick myself out of it. And it started with not having anything to wear. I travel with clothes just in case something pops off.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, if I'm not going to do this thing, I got to tell my team, I don't even want to have a dress ready.
So what does that mean?
I think that Michelle Obama suffers from TDS and RPP, Trump derangement syndrome and rich people problems.
Right.
Okay.
My team didn't have anything for me.
My team didn't have it. You can't go to work because you're upset by the whole thing. Poor people have to go to work.
Right.
I'm sitting here right now, probably the brokest person on television. This is from a thrift store, and I've worn it to Easter and my kids' first communion.
See, if you called me up and you said, Brian, I'm not doing this. I don't have a thing to wear. I would be, you would never do that.
I'd show up in a robe if I had to be here. And a big old thick robe, not like a sexy robe. She literally, Brian, the fact of the matter is she still works for the American public.
Right.
We still pay for her Secret Service. So the more you work for us, then you have to show up to work.
No, I understand. The other thing is she seems so unhappy for someone who is so looked up to. You put her on the cover of any magazine that sells. Her books are a big success. You know what's not a success? That podcast. Nobody's listening to the podcast. You know why? Because her husband is the Lord. Together, she's kind of like done with them, it seems.
Yeah. Well, that's, again, rich people problems. Before she even had one episode, she had hundreds of thousands of dollars of sponsors. I've had a podcast for 3 years. I have one sponsor, and it's me telling my dates. You know what I mean?
And we're going to get to your dates in a little while. Now, I know you tape more than just one segment because I gave you so many VCR tapes.
Yeah. Well, something happened right here. I was walking around here at Fox looking to see what was going on. I was looking for the heavyweight champ, Martha, because Martha McCollum got into it with the team. Teacher President Randy Weingarten.
Okay, let's watch.
We know that money does not equate a better outcome because in Newark, New Jersey, you have a per student, per capita expenditure that is one of the highest in the country. And you have very, very difficult
outcome. Martha, sweetheart, listen to me.
Please don't call
me
sweetheart.
It actually does. I'm sorry. My bad.
It's such a put down, right? Sweetheart. Honey, let me explain.
She probably calls them stewardesses on the plane, flight attendants. I also want to know how consistently all these people have the same hairstylist who push this agenda. Her, Elizabeth Warren, and that man who's married to the president of France. I want to know how they all have the hair.
They do look remarkably similar. And we are talking about education, a serious thing. And I thought Martha was right. Would you have done the same thing?
For sure.
Right.
For sure. I mean, you're expecting all of that whole agenda is about what your pronouns are. Martha's aren't sweetheart or honey.
Not, as far as we could tell. Certainly not. It doesn't sound like it. Tell me, if I want to see you on the road, where would I go?
Pescatelli.com.
All right. And also, we can see you in Lowell, Arkansas, Tulsa, Oklahoma, and Denver, Colorado, May 19th through 12th. So once you get to Denver, you can watch her 3 straight days. That's
what
I'm getting from
this.
That's it. Tammy, great to see you.
I love you.
Congratulations on all the success. All right, thanks, Tammy. Meanwhile, coming up next, you might have seen him on TikTok or bought a ticket to a show at Madison Square Garden. I caught up with a country music sensation, a self-made success story, Warren Zeiders, for an interview you can only find here on One Nation. So don't move. Oh, and a quick note. For all of you out there and your concern, I truly appreciate it. I got hundreds of letters and emails like this. One from Jeff talking about the scar, the lump that was on my neck. And I had it checked out, thanks to you guys. And it turns out it was benign. Just cut it out, attached to the muscle, ready to go. But unfortunately, the stitches haven't healed yet. But I still have to do the show. Thanks so much for your concern. I appreciate it. And I owe you all a thank you. And thanks so much for the medical advice. Please bill me.
You
Welcome to Fox News Live. I'm Ashley Strohmeyer in New York. A significant severe weather outbreak is expected to unfold across a large chunk of the country this week. Forecasters are warning of large hail, damaging winds, and possible tornadoes. Parts of Minnesota, Iowa, and Wisconsin could see the strongest storms tomorrow. And then by Tuesday, the severe weather threat shifts from Texas to the Northeast. Tens of thousands of mourners are paying their respects to Pope Francis. Lines to visit his tomb at St. Mary Major in Rome wrapped around the blocks on Sunday. It was the first day the public was able to view it since his funeral on Saturday. His simple marble tomb is only inscribed with his name. Francis is the first pope to be laid to rest outside the Vatican in more than a century. I'm Ashley Strohmeyer, and I'm back to One Nation with Brian Kilmeade. For all of your headlines, log on to foxnews.com.
So let me update this story. Since doing it right here on One Nation weeks ago about Long Island's fight to keep their Native American names for their schools, high schools and grammar schools, especially in my town of Massapequa, Long Island, the story has flat out blown up, garnering coverage from media outlets all across the country, especially in the New York Post. They were big help, with even President Trump weighing in on Truth Social, saying this: "I agree with the people in Massapequa, Long Island, who are fighting furiously to keep the Massapequa Chiefs logo on their team schools, and forcing them to change the name after all these years is ridiculous and, in actuality, an affront to our great Indian population. By the way, it's been there since 1956. Now to this. He's a country rocker with a wild side and a viral rise and a heart rooted in family and faith. From lacrosse fields to sold-out arenas, Warren Zeiders is riding the lightning all the way to country stardom. And he's just getting started. He made some time for us. Watch.
What are your thoughts about being this close to the Garden and knowing that you were in there in front of a sold-out crowd?
Stepping on that stage for the first time in front of that many people and being here in New York with how iconic the venue is, it was like, oh, this is welcome to the big boy leagues.
I'm gonna ride the lightning, feel the thunder, till the darkness pulls me under.
What led to you recording a song and putting it on TikTok? It was Ride the Lightning, right?
It was Ride the Lightning. I was going to say it was my followers. My followers, I always say, they were followers and they became fans. Because it started with posting covers, and then it led to we want original music, to then me writing, to then me putting out my first hit song, Ride the Lightning. And then it was like, now you're doing it. It was insane.
Gonna ride the lightning.
Was this always the dream, though, to be a musician, to be a performer, get paid, do this for a living?
You know, I feel guilty saying that it wasn't, but that's part of my story. You know, like, I went to school to play lacrosse. I thought that I was going to go play for 4 years. I was going to come out and, you know, get a job. And I knew I probably wanted to do something in sales and marketing, something entrepreneurial. Now, there always was that underlying love for music my entire life. I was on a lacrosse field singing a song. I was at home plucking the guitar, singing a song. But I had no one in my life telling me that you have a gift worth sharing with the world.
I need it all.
It slowly became my dream once I found how close I was to tasting it. And then now that I do this, I couldn't imagine a life where I'm not doing this.
Your sister helped told you, one of the people, your biggest supporters, who told you to post this stuff, right?
Yeah.
And so you put this out there.
Yeah. She quickly regretted it after all the videos I was recording, and she could hear me sing for hours on end. But no, love my little sister.
You got to pay back your sister a little. She goes to college. Mm-hmm. It's an expensive proposition. What'd you do at Christmas?
At Christmas, I paid off my sister's student loans. And that was a really emotional moment. I'm trying not to get choked up talking about it right now. I mean, I love my sister to pieces. All glory to God, man. God gave me this position, and he's given me so many things. And to be able to give back to my family and to my sister, that's what it's all about.
'Cause when the clock strikes midnight, gonna ride the lightning.
Ride the lightning, what does it mean? I mean, in the video, you're in a prison.
Yes, that is a literal sense, and that is a very creative exposure on a way of interpreting the song. But Ride the Lightning, for me, you know, I'm in country music, but it definitely leans more rock, and that's from my dad's influence growing up. But for the song, the most iconic line in that song that went uber viral all across social media was, "Mom always said I was born on the wild side."
Mom always said I was born on the wild side.
Where are you?
I definitely have a wild side to me, and I think definitely an adrenaline junkie.
Your next big hit, which was?
Pretty Little Poison.
She's my pretty little poison.
Is that still your number one?
Yeah, I mean, as of right now, until we get the next number one.
Right.
But I mean, that song, man, has touched so many lives.
Yeah, she came with a warning, but I...
And I knew it on the day when we wrote it. I knew it was special.
And the next big one after that was?
We got Relapse Now.
Which is out now.
Which is out now. And current radio single and everything. We're on the Relapse tour.
But the Relapse has nothing to do with drugs or alcohol, right?
Nope.
It is a relationship.
Yeah. There's an underlying tone with my music. Yeah. At 25, you can tell, kind of, I always joke about my dating life, and that's kind of where I'm at right now.
Did you finish college?
Nope, college dropout.
How tough was it to tell your parents, hey, I'm dropping out, I'm going to give this music thing a shot?
It was tough and it wasn't tough. I'm very bullheaded, just like my father, and my parents were not crazy about the idea of me dropping out my senior year, but I bet it on myself, and I told them. I was like, guys, the iron's hot. This is what I'm committing myself to, and I'm done.
Are you ready? You mentioned you go to Nashville, and the difference is, for most people, you don't really necessarily have to be an intern, work for a recording studio. You've got to go in established, right? Mm-hmm. You have these followers, you have a manager already.
Yeah.
Did you pick up any resentment from people who said, I grinded it, or this is a shortcut?
Oh, yeah. And there always will be, and there still is resentment. There always will be. And, you know, I'll be the first one to say, yes, I am competitive, and I have a small circle in my life, and I'm all for making friends and stuff like that, but at the end of the day, not everyone's going to be happy for success, and that's the reality of life. There's a difference between having rise to success, and I call it the flash pan effect, or there's actually sustainability to it. And there was a lot of people, and there still are people right now on social media that, you know, they have a moment. But what are you going to do with the moment? Are you going to capitalize? And then are you going to transition the social numbers into streaming numbers? And the streaming numbers into hard ticket sales? And then the hard ticket sales into merchandise sales? Like, all these different minute details in running a corporation.
Intoxicated, out of my mind.
I love what I get to do, but I don't live the traditional rock star life that everyone thinks you're living and everything. I'm very modest, I think, and choices I make and whatnot, and I think that's all thanks to my parents too. It's all goes back into the business and just pressing forward and allowing it to grow and give back to my family, but give back to the fans, man.
And do you go out of your way to be apolitical when people ask you these things? Do you try to, does the entertainment business part of you say, let's stay away?
I think a big thing for me is that, you know, if our friend wanted to come hang out with us, take a photo with us, or go play golf, you know who I'm talking about.
Oh.
We gotta go take a photo with him.
President Trump.
Mr. Trump, yes.
Yeah.
I watched the video of him and DeChambeau playing golf, and I was like, man, that'd be a lot of fun going playing golf with those two.
Right.
And I'm always outspoken about my faith. I think that, you know, I don't go out of my way to ever push it down someone's throat or anything like that. But any chance I get, I always make sure that I give him all the glory and showcase my conservative values and, you know, my Christian beliefs.
I can feel it in my bones, but I ain't running.
So you're doing 7,000, you want to get to 20,000. You're 25 years old, single guy. It seems like everything's hitting. The next big story, the next big goal for you?
I think for me, you know, I got this tour coming up in the fall. And I think a big one for me is we're almost there already, which is insane, but I go back to my hometown at the end of my fall tour coming up. In Hershey for the Giant Center in front of about 9,000, 10,000 people. And
it's damn near sold out, which is insane. So
you may know him as Dr. Frazier Crane, America's level-headed TV psychiatrist for over 20 years. But Kelsey Grammer is also a history buff. More on his new Fox Nation series celebrating America, only here next.
Ain't that America? Something to see, baby. Ain't that America? Home of the free, yeah. Little big houses.
Hi, I'm regional commercial...
All right, you might remember Kelsey Grammer as the sharp-tongued shrink who first stole the show on Cheers before eventually spinning off to his own character, Frasier.
Two kids to do last night to play some games. I mean board games. Not that you were bored or excited. Well, not that I'd know anything or should, but warm buns, Elaine.
Here,
I'll have one. Oh, warm. Why don't we go sit at the table?
Okay.
What the hell's wrong with you?
But now Kelsey Grammer is diving into a different kind of drama, the real stuff, with his brand new series on Fox Nation, our favorite app and streaming device, Blood on the Bridge, the Battle of Lexington and Concord, bringing history to life, chronicling the American Revolution as we approach America's 250th birthday next year. Here's a clip.
We're the Sons of Liberty, led by radical politician Samuel Adams.
If this body will not take action, the people will.
I'm the richest man in Massachusetts, John Hancock.
The Illinois is carrying 114 chests of tea on board.
Stage a revolutionary protest known as the Boston Tea Party.
Yep, it premieres tomorrow on Fox Nation. Kelsey Grammer joins us now. Kelsey, congratulations on the series. Drops on Monday. What should we all know about what you put into it and why it means so much to you?
Thanks, Brian. Why it means so much to me, it's a pretty good question. I've done several of these now, and of course, this is our latest sort of installment of what I hope to be a big library of coverage of the American Revolution. It is the fundamental event of my life, even though it's hundreds of years old. It is why we are here. It is why I'm here. And our lack of understanding and the current lack of understanding about the dynamics of what these people did for us, I believe I have a responsibility to try to revivify that for most of America, if I can get them to watch and listen and pay attention to the fact that we have this extraordinary gift that's been given to us, and we are capable of losing it at any moment, and it's going to take an understanding of where we came from and where we're headed, and both have to be the same place.
We're going to mark 250 years as a country. I know President Trump is going to have a blowout year. This is the year that led up to the year that everybody talks about. And of course, we win in 1783 and we get our full government in 1789. But I know you see some of the headlines now with President Trump saying this is going to be a very big deal. And I hope he's smart enough to reach out to you because you should play a big role because your passion for it, your talent and your knowledge. But I got to ask you something a little off subject a little. Everyone gets pick up that for it's a 4-part series starts on Monday. I was thinking about the sitcom success you had. And I was thinking about Happy Days. They had a reunion 6 months ago. And then they have all these classic shows that are having their reunions. And you said one in Cheers a year ago. And Frasier's coming back. When you guys were on with these series, MASH, there was 20, 30 million people watching. We had something in common. Are we ever going to have that again? If we had the quality of a Cheers or a Frasier, would America still stop and watch the same thing on network television again? Or are we forever fractured?
Right. I think America will. I think we all need a good laugh. And of course, we haven't really had good laughs lately. We got ourselves sort of siloed into different worlds and different senses of culture, right? So that then we excluded one another from this. But honestly, we are one. This country really is one. We are one people. And the more politics and our cultural entertainment absorbs that fact and then kind of reflects it back at the audience, I think the audiences will increase again. The audience size will increase. Participation will increase because we've lost that common denominator that means we are all united. I guess it helps to separate people, you know, to maintain power. If you want to confuse people about who they are, what their identity is, it's easier to control them. I do believe that's true, and I think that's been going on in politics for quite a while now. But I'd like to get that unifying message back, and I think Donald Trump's actually on to a lot of things. I think he's pointed in the right direction. The louder people scream about it, they identify themselves as the people who don't really want it to happen. Okay. All right. But it's not for the people of the people by the people. It's for themselves. And I think that has to be singled out, thinned out, winnowed, discarded.
And I think
that's what elections are for.
Exactly. Blood on the bridge. The Battle of Lexington and Concord could do that. This is our story. We have our own families, I get it, but this is the American story, and we're going to celebrate in year 250, even as we start on April 19th, when it really got started in 1775. Thanks so much, Kelsey Grammer. I'll see you again soon.
It's a pleasure, Brian, always.
All right. Meanwhile, he's got a book coming out in May. We hope to talk to him about it then. Up next, we close out the show with a sneak peek at your week.
Hi, Kevin O'Leary, Mr. Wonderful.
All right, here we go. To close things out, a sneak peek at the week. Big news, Congress is back in session. They have to work for a living, start working on the big, beautiful bill. Also, for me and for you, I'll be at the White House to celebrate President Trump's 100 days. I'll be at Pebble Beach for Fox and Friends. And speaking of Fox and Friends, I will have a live show on Tuesday. All the anchors will be there in front of a live audience. And keep in mind, on my radio show from 9 to noon, I will also be in the Eisenhower building with a great roster of guests, mostly Trump officials walking over and giving us the inside story, including Treasury Secretary Bessent. Meanwhile, before we go, a special shout out to a member of our family. It got bigger. Spiros has some good news. He and his wife welcomed a brand new baby girl, Georgina Irene. It happened last weekend. She weighed in at 6 pounds, 6 ounces. Mom and baby are doing great, and Spiros reports to be very tired. Welcome to One Nation, Georgina. I'm going to send you a mug. That is it for us tonight. Be sure to catch me on Fox and Friends every single day, 9 to noon, and watch the radio show from 9 to noon right after. And remember, America, stay within yourself. I'm going to get going this way.
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.